Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Enough! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We've got Michael Bumpus in with us as well. And if you guys have questions for the professor, you can text them in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll get to those. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. How are you?
We're good. You know, I saw a really cool thing. Obviously, there's a lot of negativity in the world right now, without question. But Dak Prescott, a guy we've talked a lot about, when's he going to sign his deal? He wants all this money. What's going to happen? And those are still relevant questions. But pledges $1 million to improve police training. And, you know, again, I know Dave and I with Jim have talked a lot about in a lot of these really negative times and events, you really see guys, individuals, corporations, organizations step up and give you hope, right? They just right. Let you know there are really some good people out there, and Dak Prescott proven to be one of them, given $1 million.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, he's made a lot of money during his career. He's out of work right now. He'll get something in the summertime, whatever, what kind of situation, we don't know. But to reach in his pocket to be able to do that and take care of people, I think that's fantastic.
Well, and one of his brothers died too, man. And you can see him on the Chunky Soup commercial and everything. And that guy's going through really a tough time right now. He's just been always one of my favorites, John. I've asked you a lot about him. And, you know, I just where do you think he ranks as far as quarterbacks? I know somebody had him ranked as the best deep ball thrower.
And we're talking about
Dak Prescott.
Dak, yeah. I don't think he's the best deep ball thrower, but he's a very good deep ball thrower. In the big picture, he's probably more like, some people I saw, because we're at the stage right now where everybody's giving their rankings, they have him up to maybe 9 or 10, and that might be fair because we have the big shakeup, and it depends on how far you want to take down some of the older quarterbacks. You know, I'm thinking he's more in that 13 to 14 range, but I still look at the main stats. I mean, the main stats are that he wins 66% of his games. He completes 66% of his passes. I mean, you know, it's 2/3 success, and he's been to 2 playoffs and has won a playoff game. So I think with that in mind, he probably is more 9 or 10 than he is, 12 or 13.
John, earlier today, Brock Heward hit us with some info saying that maybe it's Clowney's knee issues that are making teams reluctant to pick him up. Did you hear anything about his knee? Was that a concern to you?
Well, if not to the Seahawks, but to any new team that wants to try to sign him, it would be, because that goes back to his rookie year when he had the microfracture surgery. And so, he's got a knee that could be a ticking time bomb, and that's why, I'm sure no team, because they know about the knee, they know about the core surgery, they don't know if there's anything else that's there. And so that's why nobody at this stage will sign him, or if they do, I mean, he stands the great chance of, going to training camp, and the next time he has a chance to be with the team, and they just pull the contract. We just saw that done with Tim Jernigan of the Houston Texans, who had a 1-year, $3.25 million deal, and they basically says, well, we can't get you for a physical, so the deal's done. And so he becomes the fifth player in unrestricted free agency that happened to. So you can see that it's not just a knee. I think it's a bunch of injuries.
Well, it is weird to hear about the knee. I understand it was problematic. Yet we didn't see anything in his play the way we did with Todd Gurley, right? Todd mm-hmm. Gurley, we'd heard about the knee. It had been a problem coming out of college. It became a problem as a pro. He wasn't used as much. He looked a little bit different. With Clowney, he didn't look less explosive. It was the core injury that was the topic of conversation. I don't recall seeing him in the locker room after games with big packs of ice on his knees or anything. So it's interesting that that Brock brought that up. And as Dave said, he's probably got a source who's bringing that out. Yet it hasn't been a topic of conversation.
No, but it's one of those things where it's not a, and again, it's just a big picture problem. If you don't know him, you've got to find out about the knee and see where he is on that and where he is on all the other things. So it's just the big picture and all that stuff. And, and again, I think this could be a little bit overdone, but, the one reason that you can't sign Clowney right now, if you're another team other than Seattle, is you don't know about the knee. And, maybe Clowney's taken the position too. You got so many other injuries. He's missed 20 games in his first 6 years. Now, a lot of that was early in that first year where he couldn't do much because of the microfracture. But then, I mean, you know, is he bone on bone? But, you know, but he, you can see that he can still play. And I know that, you know, Dave Wyman played with a guy whose knee was pretty bad when he came into the National Football League, and he did pretty well. His name was John Elway.
I thought you were going to say Dave Wyman because I had a really crappy knee coming in as well.
No, but I mean, you know how bad that knee was. I mean, you know, at the beginning of his career, it did not look good, but I think he came out of it okay.
Yeah, he did okay. I'll tell you, Elway, in the latter part of his career, that was a bad-looking body, man.
Oh, yeah.
He had those pigeon toes, and I remember his rib cage kind of came to a point, and he was just a tough dude, man, just a great football player. Hey, looking at Jacob Martin, I miss that guy. Now, you know, the trade for Clowney, I mean, certainly at the time it was worth it, but... And now Barkevious Mingo, who was also part of that trade, he's in Chicago.
Chicago,
I think
minimum,
he played okay, for Houston, but nothing great. But you think we'll look back and go? I don't know if Jacob Martin has that kind of quick twitch sort of edge presence, but he's a pretty good player, and it's just weird with this thing with Clowney coming out, thinking that certainly for the year it worked out, but. If Jacob Martin, and we heard from John McClain down in Houston, that who you know, John, that, mm-hmm. I mean, he's doing pretty well down there. And if this guy, you know, becomes this, you know, the next great pass rusher off the edge, you know, Matthew Judon, whatever, that'll look,
I don't think he's going to get to that level, but I think he's going to get to a good level because, I mean, he was doing well when he was here. You know, he had to make the adjustment to go in to become a linebacker, you know, going into the 3-4 defense there and did some good things. And, you know, I think what you're looking at is he's more of a number three than a number two, but he's a real good number three as a pass rusher. And so, you know, if he were here, he definitely would be very solidly in the rotation. But, you know, again, they were able to get Clowney and say what you want. I mean, you know, Clowney was able to elevate everything to get them to 11 wins.
Go get him, Bump.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were jumping in, Bob. Sorry about that. John, what do you think of the Seahawks receiving core as it is? I mean, do you feel like they need a Josh Gordon? I know everyone wants a Josh Gordon. Do you feel like they need a Josh Gordon to make them the best receiving core in this division, or do you feel like they're there already?
No, I don't think. I mean, I don't. I think that I know the Pro Football Focus just did a thing on receiving cores, and they had Seattle number 18. But I think it's good enough right now. We're talking the wide receiving core. I think that he would just be a bonus and a good bonus because it's not going to put him up in the top 10. You know, they'll probably then if they get Gordon, they'll be somewhere in that. You know, maybe 13, 14 range, kind of right in the middle of the pack, but it's good enough because number one, you have a great quarterback. And when you have a quarterback who's probably the second best quarterback in the league and Russell Wilson, I mean, he makes everybody that much better. I mean, do they need one? No, I think they can get by with the ones that they have, but if they can get Gordon, I think that it makes it so much better because, I mean, think about, you know, because the debate's going to be how much two tight end, how much three receivers you're going to use, and, you know, predominantly they were more of a three receiver team, but I think you're going to see more two tight ends, and of course, that even with a tight end, it's going to be, you know, Cedric Abouye, who's going to be kind of in that role that George Fant has, but I just think Gordon is such a natural if you can get him because you'll get him at a good price and you know, have him sorted out and then battle for that number three job against Philip Dorsett.
Again, you guys can text in any questions you've got for the professor, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. If you've got football questions for John Clayton, we'll get to some of those. John, I asked this question last night when I was emailing these guys about the show, and that is, we always talk about the window for this team, the window for Russell Wilson and the window for Bobby Wagner, and, you know, let's take advantage of it. What about the window for Pete Carroll? Pete Carroll's 68 years old. He's going to be 69 in September. I believe Marv Levy was the oldest coach in NFL history at 72. Pete's deal's done at the end of the 2021 season. Are we underestimating the window there? I think we just feel like he acts so young, he's going to be here forever, and I feel like we don't quite appreciate what a great coach he truly is. I mean, in my opinion, he's a Hall of Fame coach. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's Russell gets all the credit. I feel like we think, well, as long as Russell's there, you got a chance. Well, what about Pete? I mean, could Russell win with any coach? How much credit should we give Pete, and how much should we be focused on his window?
I think I still think he's going to get one more contract, to be honest, because, you know, look how mentally young he is, physically young he is, and how in tune he is. And, I think in this decade since taking the job, from 2010 to 2019, he was the second best coach in the National Football League. I know that's the way we voted for it on the all-decade team, because Bill Belichick was going to win. But, of course, same thing. You're a great coach and you're aligned with a great quarterback. That puts you in a great position to be able to do what he's able to do. And so I still think that you do one more contract with him and Russell Wilson, and then see how long it can go. But I mean, the one thing that he always talks about is that Marv Levy, coached into his 70s, and now you've got more coaches that are younger enough at their age to be able to coach into their 70s.
Hey John, I'm looking at Derek Carr and his numbers, the Oakland quarterback, and it's just weird that you don't hear as much praise. I guess he kind of falls into a Dak Prescott sort of category for me anyway, and I'm not watching him every weekend and everything, but he was eighth as far as yardage goes. The other thing is, you look at the trajectory of his career, just completion percentage. He went 58, 61, 63, 63, 69, 70 last year, and he only threw 8 interceptions, 21 touchdowns. Is he an underrated guy? How long do you think he hangs around the league?
Derek Carr, I think that it's one that he's got to see if he can hold on to his job, because, sure, he got the high percentage, but also he didn't get the wins and he didn't get the yards downfield that he wants, because it's 6.2 yards on his yards per attempt, and that's below standards. And that's why Marcus Mariota is standing by his side on a 2-year deal at $17.6 million that could very well give him the opportunity at some point to take the job away. I just think that John Gruden doesn't have complete confidence in Derek Carr. Sure, the numbers may not look good, but the numbers aren't getting the victories.
John, I've been fascinated with this, the quarterbacks that were drafted this year, especially obviously with Tua and Burrow. If Tua is healthy and he starts, who do you think has the better year? Do you think Burrow has a better year, or do you think Tua has a better year?
I think Tua would have the better year. I'm not saying he's the better quarterback, but I think at least there's more talent on the Dolphins than there are in the Bengals, because the Bengals just really started the rebuilding process, where at least the Dolphins, you can say they tore it down and they added more assets overall. Now, you can maybe make the argument that the receiving core for the Bengals is much better than what the Dolphins has, and that may help them out, but the Dolphins offensive line and Bengals offensive line, not very good. I mean, these are two teams right now that could struggle, and I know some people do think that Tua may just be on scholarship this year. That very well could be, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is there as the starter, and so they'll have to see how quickly Tua can come in there and start. But I think both are going to be really good quarterbacks, and it's just going to take some time.
206 wants to know, John, if you feel like the Seahawks have underutilized Shaquem Griffin. I think we saw a little bit of his pass rush skill last year, but we're all figuring out, how does he make the team with all the linebackers they have? What do you think? Have they not taken advantage of what he does really well?
No, I mean, they're still trying to figure it out. I mean, and you can see that, he's at the back of the rotation for the linebacking core. He's at the back of the rotation for the pass rush. I mean, he's only like about 226, 227 pounds, so he's very light. I mean, very good on special teams. And, you kind of go through, and he's going to be on the borderline of making the team or not making the team. I think he still will make it, but, it's a matter that, he is good, but he's not as good as some of the players around him. I mean, is he better than Michael Kendricks when he was there? Is he better than Cody Barton? I'd say no. And same thing as the pass rush. But, he cares a lot, he works hard, and he's a good football player.
Yeah, it was kind of weird last year, John, how I thought they were going to start him off just down with the D lineman. And when we watched camp, he was there, you know, dropping back into zones, playing second level in 7-on-7 drills. It was weird because they talked a lot about that, about getting him out there and getting that done. It makes me wonder what happened. There was a lot of kind of mysteries last year, like, why didn't some of the rookies play more? And that was one of my bigger questions, because they ended up at the end, what was it, John, like, the Arizona game. Mm-hmm. I know he got a pressure on Kyler Murray, but they all of a sudden started putting him in a lot more. I think Philly, actually, in week 12 is the first time we really saw him consistently rushing the passer.
Yeah, but I think what ended up happening is that everything was readjusted because of the lack of the pass rush. Okay, so for example, they probably played more zone than they normally would. Okay, they didn't play as much man as they should. Okay, they had to do more blitzing to try to at least get some pressure on the quarterback. And so the run defense struggled. And so you put all those things together and, you say, okay, how do you get through this season knowing that this is one of the worst defenses in Pete Carroll's era with the Seahawks? And the idea is, okay, we got to be more creative. We got to do a little bit more protective type of things and then try to make the best of the situation, where this year I still argue that this team is more talented on defense, because, again, I know we talked about it earlier today, Jadeveon Clowney, as great as he is, and he played Leo and did a very good job, but he's not a sack guy, so he's more of a five technique. And then you look at, okay, who are the other guys that could play Leo? Well, it didn't work out for Ziggy Ansah. He's more of a five technique. And then Quentin Jefferson's a classic five technique. I mean, there was no Leos. And so I think that hurt the press. And so now you got Leo opportunities. You got Jaron Reed, who's going to be there for all 16 games. He's not going to miss the next six. So all that stuff, I think, works out pretty well. So I think that this defense is going to be better.
John, when you look at this tight end room for the Seahawks, you got Olsen, you got Hollister, you got Parkinson, and you have Sullivan. I mean, there's so many guys in this tight end room. Who do you think doesn't make it this year?
I think what will end up happening, again, this still depends on, because they're down to a little over $13 million of cap room. They've only signed one draft choice. First we have to see, because again, where the key positions are is, okay, who's going to be healthy? Is Will Disley going to be healthy? Is Chris Carson's going to be healthy? You assume that they would, but you still don't know for sure. And so those question marks, I think, will have to be answered once training camp goes. But my guess would be, if they need some cap room, they'll see if they can get some value for Jacob Hollister, because he's making $3.2 million on the restricted deal. And so that could be a possibility. And then some of the other moves to see, the running back thing, I think, keep care of itself because they got Carlos Hyde. But, how the guys come back from injury is going to dictate a lot.
John, I see that Luke Kuechly has been offered a front office job with the Carolina Panthers as a pro scout. What do you think? I mean, it's so weird to think he's only 29 years old, and he's retired. He had played there for 8 years. But what do you think the chances are that he ends up in the front office? I know some people have talked about him as a broadcaster. Where does he end up?
You can see that at some point he's smart enough that I think he'll be a general manager. And what you look at is that Marty Herney is the one that's offering him the job to come in there. And I think it's a wise thing to do, because remember, they did the same thing with Dan Morgan, a linebacker who was smart, may not have been as good as Luke Kuechly, but a good linebacker. And, he's now moved around to several different places. And of course, he was here. And so, no, I think that's a good vibe and a good move by Marty Herney and by Luke Kuechly to kind of pair that up.
Well, that's when you really know a guy loves football, because I'll say this, at the end of my career, I would leave and sometimes leave the facility late when I was in Denver, because I had to get a special treatment because of my stupid knee and everything else. And I would see the coaches up there and the GM and all the scouts. I mean, their lights in their office would be on, and just going from football right into scouting, which is just a lot of travel and going around and looking at players. And can you imagine, John, being a college linebacker, and you look over and the scout that's looking at you is Luke Kuechly? Mm-hmm. I mean, Wow.
You're going to be pretty intimidated because, again, it's like I don't know if the shortness of his career is going to take away the fact that he could be a Hall of Famer, but and it very well could. But, I mean, you know, he and Bobby Wagner, since coming into the league in 2012, have been fantastic and, you know, have had Hall of Fame-type careers. But what amazed me about Kuechly was just how sharp he was, because I don't, if was there ever a time that a play went to one side or the other that he had to jump on it? I mean, he was able to read offensive plays like, you know, offensive quarterbacks were able to read the defenses.
Yeah. Hey, John, a couple of just throwaway questions here. Somebody asked, and I got one, my personal question for you is, what's been your go-to coronavirus meal? What have you eaten the most?
Let's see. What I've eaten.
Pizza guy?
No, because that puts too much weight on me. So I don't. Not the pizza guy. It's been pretty much. I mean, I'm on a list. Last week I've had like two sets of bratwursts. So that's in there. You know, a barbecue chicken sandwich. You know, that with whatever, you know, what kind of vegetables and stuff like that to go with that. And then, you know, a lot of you know, just kind of pasta stuff.
Okay. All right. And Professor, also, I think I'm going to win the long hair competition because I don't think I had a haircut since November or December. But have you gotten your hair cut? What's the state of the Clayton hairdo right now?
Yes, I've had it cut twice.
Oh, okay.
I can't say how, but it's like I had it cut twice. And it wasn't by me, wasn't by anybody in the family. But, you know, I've had it cut twice.
You okay. Still have the ponytail, John, though, right?
Yeah. And I mean, not much other hair on the top.
Go ahead, Bump.
John, what are your thoughts on Sam Darnold? Do you think he's good enough to be a superstar quarterback, and do you think the Jets have enough around him to kind of help him along the way?
Yeah, yes and no. When I say yes, I think he does have the talent, but he's got to start showing it. But again, it's hard to show it when you don't have the type of receivers that can make you that much better. Because when you look at this group, you know, they lose Robbie Anderson, you know, Quincy Enunwa had to go ahead and, you know, go on injured reserve because with his neck, he's going to have to retire from football. And, you know, they've added some, but I don't know if they've added anything that's that great. You know, I just question the tight end position. Sure, they've got two running backs, you know, Le'Veon Bell and Frank Gore, but they've now totally redone the offensive line. And so what I think is going to happen with, you know, four new starters on the offensive line, that's going to take forever to be able to mesh. But, you know, I think he has the ability, and I thought he was the most talented quarterback in the draft. But say what you want, as bad as Baker Mayfield was last year, Baker Mayfield has outperformed him. Josh Allen has outperformed Darnold. And so, you know, the guy that was supposed to be the top of the class is not.
John, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, Seattle fans have been proclaiming Russell Wilson as the best quarterback in the NFL for some time now, but we might actually have some analytics to prove it. Sam Munson of the Pro Football Focus will join us next to talk about that with Bob, Dave, and more. Michael Bumpus in the rest of the week for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We get a chance to talk about Russell Wilson. As much as we all love talking about Russell Wilson as Seahawks fans, everybody feels like he's underappreciated, that he's, if he's not the best, he's one of the best in the league, and we might have some analytics to prove what we all believe here. And joining us now is a man who's written a piece for Pro Football Focus, sort of supporting that statement. That'd be Sam Munson with us. Sam, how are you?
Doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing well. We appreciate you taking some time with us and enjoyed your article here. It's the headline is Young Quarterback Steal the Spotlight. Russell Wilson is playing like the NFL's best signal caller. So for those of our listeners that haven't had a chance to check this out yet, just if you could kind of, you know, tell everybody in a brief way how you came to the conclusion that Russell Wilson is the greatest quarterback to ever touch a football.
I mean, you start looking at all the data points, and his numbers are kind of staggering. I mean, PFS calling card is our grades. You know, we're the only place out there that watches and grades every single player, every single play. in the NFL and in college. So we add this layer of context that gets missed in a lot of other statistics. But even when you start looking at the other statistics, like, it's difficult to find ways in which Russell Wilson isn't the best or one of the very best one or two quarterbacks in the NFL. And one of my favorite statistics that we have is we kind of group the graded throws we have. So the very best graded throws we group into these things called big-time throws. So you think, you know, the highest impact plays downfield, accurate passes over a long distance, you know, throws into tight coverage to move the chains on third down, this kind of thing. Wilson has way more of those than anybody else in the NFL right now. Over 2 years, he's got eight more than Patrick Mahomes. Over 3 years, you know, you get rid of Mahomes from the equation, he's got 27 more than anybody else over 3 years. And, you know, there are quarterbacks out there that make a lot of big throws, but most of the time it comes with an increase in mistakes, with more, you know, not necessarily interceptions, because those can fluctuate with luck. But again, the negatively graded throws, we call those turnover-worthy plays, whether they were turnovers or not. But Breeze is always in the top five when it comes to, you know, the percentage of turnover-worthy plays as well. So he's able to make more big plays than pretty much any quarterback in the NFL without that coming at the expense of making more mistakes. He's always among the best at limiting mistakes as well. You know, then you start looking at where he targets on the field, and he's not a, you know, the beneficiary of a dink and dunk offense that some other quarterbacks are. He doesn't have, you know, the best offensive system working in his favor the way a Patrick Mahomes does with Andy Reid as the head coach. You know, Russell Wilson is just a phenomenal quarterback right now. He's elevated his game over the past 2 years to a level that he'd only ever hit in stretches before that.
Sam, you mentioned the graded throws. What are some of the other things that Russell, in your analytics, other categories where Russell really excels?
Yeah, well, last season he led the league in terms of PFF WAR. So our research and development guys have essentially tried to create a football version of WAR, wins above replacement, that baseball has had for years, and really quantify the value that each player is bringing to the team above and beyond what you would get from just a replacement player at that position. And obviously quarterbacks are all the top guys when it comes to PFF WAR, but Russell Wilson was the most valuable player in the NFL last year. I know Lamar Jackson was a unanimous MVP, and that's where all the sort of the ink went, but in terms of actual play-by-play quantifiable value, Russell Wilson was bringing as much to the table as anybody, and the player that we gave the MVP award to last season.
Hey, let me ask you this, Sam. What do you have to do to get to be, you know, a grader? I mean, in the Pro Football Focus, you know, system, I mean, do you have guys that are coming in as rookies, or how does it, who, what makes up the graders, and how do you become a guy that grades a guy like Russell Wilson for Pro Football Focus?
Well, to start the grading, the training process, there's no bar to clear. You know, the more football knowledge you have, all that kind of stuff, the better. But we're not excluding anybody from the outcome, the starting process. At that stage, you've got to go through our grading or our analyst training process, which usually lasts an entire off season. Our grading manual is like 300 plus pages. It's got now years worth of NFL feedback from all the NFL contacts we have. And it's basically only the best people. You know, you go through this thing, you run through the training process, you get tested along the way, and only the cream of the cream, the guys at the very top who show, you know, consistent aptitude for actually grading correctly by our scale are going to make it to the point where we're comfortable letting them loose on games, on first run games. Even though we have all of our games are sort of double blind tested, and there's many layers of checks and balances to ensure that, you know, one guy's grading doesn't skew anything. But effectively, there's no requirements to begin with, other than the fact that you want to do that job and you can demonstrate that you're good at it.
Sam, how do you guys grade Russell Wilson when it comes to the quick game, the short passes? Because a thing you hear about Russell is that he's not on time sometimes, you know. So when he has to get the ball out, quick game, is there a grade scale for that? And how do you guys view him?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think he rates fine on the quick game. The Russell Wilson thing, it's not necessarily it's not one instead of the other. You know, it's definitely a fair criticism that Russell Wilson extends plays and holds onto the ball longer than most players, and you know, doesn't necessarily lean on the quick game as much as some of these other players. But that doesn't necessarily follow that he's not good at it. It's just stylistically, he likes playing in that kind of, you know, almost backyard football way of, look, I'm just going to run around back here, open myself up a better opportunity deeper downfield and take advantage of that. And when you look at the numbers, there are very few quarterbacks that are able to extend the play and consistently make good plays when he's had the ball in his hands for 3.5+ seconds. Wilson's the best in the league at that. And the other two guys that are really good, Patrick Mahomes, Ben Roethlisberger, the two guys you would expect to be good at that, you know, got this reputation for being able to extend plays and still make sound decisions. And those three are just way clear of anybody else. But, you know, when you ask him to get rid of the ball quickly, or when he does get rid of the ball quickly, he's still good at it. He's still an excellent quarterback in all other facets as well.
Sam, this is kind of in line with what Michael just asked you about, you know, being on time, but it's more specific to just being a pocket passer, because Kurt Warner was on the station yesterday speaking with John Clayton and talked about, you know, maybe I haven't appreciated Russell Wilson as much as I should have, but I think he still has work to do, especially when it comes to being a pocket passer. And I think it was you guys that came out with some numbers on him in the pocket that were really favorable. Do you have a stat that just is about how well he excels while in the pocket, because he is a guy that will run out of the pocket quite often, as you just talked about, but just as a pocket passer, how does he set up for you?
Yeah. And again, it's not that, you know, a tendency to do one thing leads to an inability to do something else. Russell Wilson he's good at everything, you know, whether you want him in the short game, whether you want him throwing from the pocket, and just last 2 years, his PFF grade is second in the NFL on straight dropbacks. So clean pocket plays. Drew Brees is number one. Russell Wilson's number two. Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers are tied for number three. So there's no scenario that you can paint where Russell Wilson isn't a top-level quarterback. I think these guys, I have a ton of respect for Kurt Warner, so I mean this as a criticism of him. But I think, you know, players want to see the game played a certain way. And particularly if you are a pocket passer like Kurt Warner, that's what you envisage as the perfect NFL quarterback. It's a Peyton Manning. It's a Tom Brady. It's a Kurt Warner. And Russell Wilson doesn't play like that. And neither does Patrick Mahomes. Neither does Lamar Jackson. And sometimes you just have to accept that this is the way they want to play the game. And it's not that it's worse. It's just different. So Wilson does extend a lot of plays. And sometimes it goes badly. You know, he'll take a sack that he shouldn't, or there'll be a negative play in there as well. But you have to look at the overall numbers. And overall, it's by far a net win, Russell Wilson playing this way, even if it does take away a few plays out of the rhythm of the offense, or some plays where he bails from a clean pocket and makes something else happen instead. It's just a different style, but it's effective. It's at least as effective as, you know, other pocket passers, and probably more so.
Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus has been our guest here. Sam, really good stuff. We really appreciate your perspective and taking the time with us. Stay safe out there, and we hope to talk to you again.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
There you go. Sam Monson, you heard it right there, by the way. Just a counter, and I love Kurt Warner as well. He's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen in person. He was amazing and the greatest show on turf, but you just heard him say that, according to their grades, Russell Wilson is second in the league behind Drew Brees passing from the pocket. So I'm not sure what Kurt was seeing, but there you go. Good stuff from Sam Monson. Remember, you do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, you can just tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and you got a radio right there. So coming up, what was Pete Carroll like as a college football player? Scott Boras joined the Flying Coach podcast and explained. We'll hear more about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Do you believe the season will actually start on time, or do you think there'll be some delay? I don't think it's going to start on time. I think we're going to play a full 16 games, but I'm not sure we're going to start September 1st. I hope we do. I'm not sure how you do it, really, where we are now. I would not want to be making the rules and trying to figure this thing out. We can all go in with the best intentions, but my question would be, what is going to happen when the Rudy Gobert of the NFL tests positive in the second week of training camp? Then what happens? So that's a question I don't think anybody's prepared to answer, and that's why I think it's going to be difficult to get started.
Don't you speak that evil, Tony Dungy. Don't you do that. I love Tony Dungy, one of my all-time favorite people in all of sports, and he was there speaking with Golic and Wingo. He doesn't feel like the season will start on time. I mean, listen, the problem is none of us know what's going to happen with the virus, if it's going to start to spike up, and maybe there's a bigger chance of that now with all these protests and people getting together in massive crowds, and we'll see what happens. But it felt like it was trending the right way, that proper precautions were going to be in place in terms of the testing, and I believe I've read about some of the plans if somebody does test positive. So I'm gonna hold out hope that it does start on time. I love Tony, but I'm going to disagree with him in saying he's being too pessimistic, too cynical here. Let's remain optimistic.
Well, I agree with him from the standpoint of the Rudy Gobert thing, because I just think anymore we're not able to handle things like that. Just as a country, the way they, I mean, people will go, oh, well, let's say, you know, Russell Wilson gets it. Or somebody like that. Well, Russell Wilson got it. So, I mean, we're not able to go off of numbers, you know, and percentages. It's like if you say, yeah, the numbers are starting to go down, a lot of times people will say, well, I know somebody who just got it. You know, so, I mean, I agree with him from that standpoint, that if even if it's an acceptable percentage, if it's, you know, this guy or that guy, or I think that it's going to cause everybody to start to go, oh, well, we can't do this. So from that standpoint, I think that's something that we're going to have to go through and, you know, and then eventually get down to the cold stats of what it is, you know. But what if somebody gets really sick, but it's only one guy or two guys? I mean, you know, I don't know that people will be able to handle that.
My thing is, like, what is an acceptable number? Like, what do the stats say? When is it? Is it ever going to be completely gone? You know, it's always going to be a risk. Do this one player kind of determine the whole season? You know, there's just so many questions. It's like, if we really want to play football, if we really want to play sports, if all it takes is one person to shut things down, then why are we even lacing them up? Because someone's going to get it. I mean, it is what it is. Right. It's not completely gone. As long as it's out there, someone's going to get it. So what's the threshold? What is the number to where we say, okay, now we got to shut things down? Is it one player? Is it 100 players? I don't know.
Yep.
When you don't play the same sports and you kind of, because, you know, we're all like high school quarterbacks, and I tell Pete every day I got a better arm than him, of course. But the idea of it is, for me, what is the intensity. This dude would come back to the room and he'd have this football shape on his forehead because he hit with his head all the time. He's a defensive back. And I'm going, hey, you know, can we talk about angular functionality so they could reduce the, you know, this is like, it's like hitting a baseball, you know, you hit the guy, but don't do it with your head. And he'd go, no, it's got to sound right. It's got to sound right. You know? And so it's not that you tackled the guy. It's got to sound and feel right. You know, you gotta have that, but monstrous intensity, perfection and detail. I think the one thing Pete and I shared were we always were anxious to find out the latest information and what we could do to get better as players.
How funny is that? It's got to sound right. Pete wanted to bring the boom. He wanted to hear that crunch. So he would lead with his head, and obviously he wouldn't function well in today's game. But that was MLB agent Scott Boras talking about Pete Carroll. Apparently they were frat brothers in college, and this was on last week's Flying Coach podcast episode, and talked about what Pete Carroll was like as a football player. I love it. It just, Pete's been about as consistent as anybody could be with his personality, his tenacity, his energy, and I love that. It's got to sound right.
Well, I love that Pete was hitting people with his helmet. You know, and look, whenever, remember when Cam Chancellor went through that, his second year, you know, he was like, hey, man, he's got to change. And, you know, so a guy who did hit with his head a lot of times, and I'm that way, I'm kind of stodgy about it. I'm like, well, you know, I have to hit it that way. And Pete's very, you know, progressive in that he's like, well, we just have to learn how to tackle different. And they did the Hawk tackling thing and everything. I think it shows that, you know, even though that's the way he did it, he's been able to adapt and change a little bit in how he coaches his players.
Yeah, the game has changed a lot. You know, I was taught to lead with the face mask as well. And, you know, I'm with the new rules. It's safer. But I tell you one thing, there is nothing like smacking a dude with your face mask, running through them, and hearing that sound. You know, that got the crowds going. But now we're smarter. We got more data out there. So if Pete Carroll can change at 60-something, I guess we all have to.
Listen to Bump, the savage wide receiver. Man, I love the side of Michael Bumpus.
In an Instagram post today, Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott revealed that he is donating $1 million to improve police training. The post is too long to read here, but everyone should go check it out. In a particularly touching moment, he said, as I process the passing of my brother, I have come to realize we are not given a voice to pronounce how much we matter. It is our obligation to tell our neighbor how much they matter to us and to take a stand for the greater good of each other. Black lives matter. We must commit to hold ourselves and our communities accountable. We must teach one another about our differences. We must embrace the different colors, cultures, and ways of life. To be multiracial is beautiful, and that is what this country is.
We touched on this earlier in the show, and as much as we're seeing the really ugly side of some people in this country, you're seeing the best sides of other people as well. And we've seen it in different athletes, entertainers, celebrities, politicians. You can throw in a ton of people out there, and just, you know, ordinary people like us walking around in everyday jobs. Dak Prescott, I mean, putting his money where his mouth is, where his heart is, more importantly. And you love seeing that in dark times, guys really stepping up and making a statement and then backing it up when they have the means to do so. So thumbs up, kudos to Dak Prescott.
You know how you just like certain players and you don't know why? I don't know what it is about Dak Prescott. I always have, and I've asked the professor about him a lot because he's really good on the field. Remember, this guy's a fourth-round draft choice. And somebody had him rated as the best deep ball thrower. But also, you know, I just really felt for him this offseason when he lost his brother, and knowing what my brother means to me. And then now he's, you know, doing the right thing, $1 million. And this is, you know, going to go to something that's actionable, that, you know, actually is going to, you know, training. So, yeah, good for Dak, man. I just wish him nothing but the best. He's just been one of my favorite non-Seahawk players in the league.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, right? How do we change things, and how do people with influence change things? This dude has $1 million to spare to try to change a process, and we talk about it, we bring awareness to it here on this radio station. We do what we can because we have a platform. Dak has an even bigger platform, and that man just donated $1 million for the cause. That's what it's all about. If we can get some more Dak Prescotts out there, the world will be a better place.
Absolutely. All right, coming up all this week, 710 ESPN Seattle is celebrating Mariners Legends Week with interviews with Mariner Hall of Famers and all-time greats across all of our shows all week long. You don't want to miss a single moment. You can obviously follow along on air, online, or listen on the 710 Sports app. And it's time for our first Mariners Legend this week. It's former Mariners pitcher Jamie Moyer. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.